Well, good morning. Welcome to our different land. It is book pick time on the program. We do it every Tuesday. We've been doing it for years and years and years. And Matt Tannenbaum from the bookstore in Lenox has been doing it with us for years and years and years. We're thrilled that he is with us on the Tuesday before Christmas and the holidays. And
it's the last Tuesday before Christmas, right?
That's right. And our end of the year, and we're just thrilled that you are here. We always love when you're here. I just want to, just a quick shout out, though. I want to thank the folks from the American Red Cross who, through their disaster relief services, are going around and bringing hot chocolate to the masses. And, of course, we are the masses. We worked with the Red Cross earlier this year and did a joint fun drive for the people of Texas after that horrible storm, the hurricane. And they are going around town, around Albany, and we just want to thank them and thank them for their great efforts, the American Red Cross. You can find out more information by going to AmericanRedCross.com and or RedCross.org, excuse me, RedCross.org. And they do wonderful work. And if you are on the streets of Albany, follow the van and you can get some lovely hot chocolate. They're also giving candy canes. And if you dip the candy cane in the hot chocolate, you get a lovely essence, a peppermint essence.
You get a peppermint, you get an essence that takes you out of the nutritional world, for sure.
You know what?
It's holiday.
It's all sugar. It's all good.
Okay.
We just want to thank them very much. They're very sweet. And we'll post some pictures. We did a little photo op out there. It was very nice. Good morning, sir. Very nice to have you here.
Hi, Joe.
You like to begin, my friend?
I'd like to stay for about an hour and a half today.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay, and just
You have my attention. I have hot chocolate and candy canes. I'm good to go.
Okay. And nap time after.
Oh, damn
for
right.
Sure, for yes. sure. I have a children's book. I have a two memoirs, three memoirs.
Well, that's
a
good
book
hot
of
chocolate.
Letters.
That's not good, like crappy hot chocolate. That's good hot chocolate.
Oh, good for us.
Okay.
Okay. I have some in the green room. I got to get back to
Go
it.
Ahead.
Okay. But I want to start with Mary Beard's new book, Women in Power. It just came out this week or at the end of last week. Women in Power, a Manifesto by Mary Beard. Mary Beard is a classicist, a professor of classics in Cambridge.
Yep.
And has written on the ancient world, Rome, her last book, SPQR, about the history of the citizens, history of Rome, came out last year. These are two essays. I don't know if they're speeches or they're essays. The first essay is called Women in Power, a Manifesto. The first essay is The Public Voice of Women. The second essay is Women in Power. And she begins the first essay by telling the story of the Odyssey.
Yeah.
When Penelope comes downstairs and starts to say something to the musicians, they'll play a different tune. Her son, Telemachus, says, "Mother, go back upstairs and shut up. This is the business," he says, "speech will be the business of men." Mary Beard says this misogyny is not hardwired. It's cultural, and it's deep.
Wow.
It's deep. It goes way, way deep. The next page or two, she reprints a cartoon that we used to have as a postcard, and I haven't been able to find it for years, but it's the postcard. It's the cartoon from Punch of a woman sitting in a boardroom with a group of men, and the chair of the board says, "That's an excellent suggestion, Miss Triggs. Perhaps one of the men here would like to make it."
Wow.
So women are always perceived of as out of power.
You know, she was on our program, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago. There was a wonderful book that she did called Confronting the Classics.
That's right.
Which, Traditions, Adventures, and Innovations. And she came on and talked about this, and Cleopatra, Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, but also just about the common people of the Roman Empire, the slaves, the soldiers, and of course the women. And it's a fascinating look. And this is just an amazing
this
book.
She just condenses
slim volume.
She brings it down. She reduces it. It's women are perceived of as knocking on the door or crashing the glass ceiling. They're out of power. And this is our cultural approach to power. And women are feared.
Women and Power by Mary Beard. Just a beautiful, beautiful volume, too.
Beautiful little book from Liveright Publishers. A little hardcover for $15.95. Great book. But then I want to go right to this book that I found because I ran a book fair a couple of weeks ago at BCD, local book fair, and I found this book. I'd heard about it, I guess. It's called A Mouse and His Child by Russell Hoban, and it's the 50th anniversary edition of a book about a toy mouse, tin wind-up toy, a mouse and his child who live in the toy shop and get sold, and the child has, when at midnight, of course, when all the toys in the toy shop can speak, the mouse child says to his father, "Father, where are we?" And his father says, "I don't know," because they're new. "What are we?" he says. "I don't know," his father says. "We shall wait and see." And then the other toys tell them, this is what happens. You go out into the world, you get sold, and the little mouse child does not want to do that. But the elephant, I think, who says, one does what one is wound to do.
Oh, that's very profound, isn't it?
It is. And so this is a book for, you know, maybe 12 and up. Because what happens is the mouse and his child have this horrendous adventure. They go out into the world without giving away too much of it. They end up, or they find themselves crushed, almost destroyed, in a town dump, slaves of Manny the Rat, who has all these wind-up toys at his beck and call. And then it becomes a heroic journey.
And they want to become self-winding.
They want to become self-winding. That's the point.
And there was an animated feature made about 10 years. This book came out in 67.
67, right.
The year of my birth. and I will also be turning 50 in a couple of days. So that came out in 67. Then 77... The animated film came out, and then the book sort of went out of print, and now is back in a 50th anniversary edition. It's a beautiful, beautiful volume.
Illustrated by pictures by David Small, a children's illustrator for many years. Lovely book, published by Scholastic.
Terrific. It is The Mouse and His Child, a novel by Russell Hoban. All right.
Russell Hoban, who wrote the Bedtime for Francis books.
Yes.
Bedtime, Bread and Jam for Francis, Baby Sister for Francis. Lovely, lovely Englishman. Two memoirs. Well, two books. Two new books. Are they memoirs? Well, they're great writers writing wonderful, wonderful stories for us.
Memoir-esque.
Okay. Patti Smith, a new book called Devotion. And I'm just going to say the other one at the same time. It's Spy of the First Person by Sam Shepard.
Oh, yeah.
And he just finished it just months or weeks before he died. Mm-hmm. Sam Shepard had ALS, could not speak, could not write, dictated some of the lines to his sisters, to his daughters. I'll talk about Sam first then, because I'm right in the middle of it. I've not read a lot of Sam Shepard, but... So I'm reading this one the other day, and he tells the story of, it's a young man talking to an old man, and an old man talking back to a young man. And these are the two voices, so this is Sam talking to himself, and Sam telling the stories that he finds are the essence of his own life. Spire, the first person, he tells the story of, there's a Pancho Villa who lives in Durango at the end of the Santa Fe Trail. Or the beginning of the Santa Fe Trail, depends on which way you're going. You know, he'll just throw that in because that needs to get thrown in. And then he tells the story of Pancho Villa and the end of his life. And then the next chapter he says, I don't like that the guy told that story about Pancho Villa. That wasn't his story to tell. That should be something else.
Yeah.
So we're getting an inside view of this great actor, writer, playwright, performer, his in the inside of his head just before he died.
And you know, yes. I was going to say, if you are now interested in reading more of Sam Shepard, some of the work is fascinating. It's very good. I would say it's a little spotty. Some of it's better than others.
I've watched people do monologues from some of his plays. And the ones that they pick are terrific. So I don't know about the other ones.
But it's lovely work. It really is. And I've heard wonderful things about this. It is called Spy of the First Person by Sam Shepard. So the other book is by the amazing Patti Smith, who has just been doing a great literary job here lately.
Has she been on? Have you had her on the show?
No.
Not yet.
No.
Okay.
I was at an event that she was at, and I got to see her perform, and I got to meet her. And I made a pitch for her to be on the show, but that didn't work.
I wrote a letter to her a year or so ago, asking her to come to my 40th anniversary, because she was there at the beginning of my career. We knew each other at the Gotham Book Mart. In fact, she gave me a broadside that she wrote about Rambo, and it was called A Devotion.
By the way,
hello.
that may be one of the greatest sentences ever muttered on this program. She gave me a broadside. Say it again.
A broadside. You know what a broadside
is,
right?
Yes.
What did I say?
By who?
By her.
Oh, okay.
That she wrote a poem about Arthur Rambo.
That's right.
About
Rambo.
A broadside about Rambo called A Devotion.
There you go.
But I have a special reason for bringing Patti Smith on the show today, Joe, because I did not bring any new Patrick Modiano books.
You're letting me down there, Matt.
There are two new Modianos since the last time I was here, but I chose not to. I'm reading them slowly, both of them. But Patti, in the beginning of the first essay, she's going to Paris and she has to pack quickly, and she grabs a Modiano off her bookshelf and takes it with her.
Oh, there you go.
So
you are kindred spirits.
me and Patti and Modi.
Modiano. This is great. This is a beautiful piece of work. And
so this is three pieces. This is her travelogue to Paris. She's going to visit her publisher and do some events for the publisher. And then in the middle, there's a short story, which I kind of skimmed. I haven't read the whole thing, about a girl from Estonia. And then the third is a visit to Camus' house. She's invited by Camus' children, by his daughter, to visit his house. And she feels pretty humbled by spending the night in Camus' room.
Now, if you have a chance, if you haven't, you should read this. But if you haven't read M Train or Just
Yes,
Kids
Yes.
yet, you really should.
Yeah.
Those are beautiful
Those
books.
Are beautiful. So this is a miniature version of it? Why I Write. And then at the end of it is, why did Camus write? Why do I write? Why did Virginia Woolf write? Why do we write? So it's a beautiful essay it's the inside of Patti Smith's head.
All seeking an emptiness to imbue with words, the words that will penetrate virgin territory, crack unclaimed combinations, articulate the infinite. Patti Smith, Devotion, Yale University Press. All right.
Next, a new book by Patti Fermor, Patrick Lee Fermor, A Life in Letters. We've talked about Fermor, I think, on the show.
I believe we
have. The esteemed travel writer who crossed Europe by foot in 1934 from Rotterdam to what he called, even then, Constantinople. And then he became this great war hero. He did this incredible thing. He and the other British general living on the island of Crete in disguise, they captured the German general who commanded the island, and he became a great folk hero in Greece. And these are his letters after the war. All his notebooks and everything were stolen, his letters and all his belongings in a case that were not stolen but lost after the war. So these are letters that he writes from far away to his girlfriend, then his wife. When they're separated, he writes to famous people. He writes letters like you don't write letters anymore. If you write a letter like that, one letter I was reading this morning in around the corner goes on for about 40 pages, and he says, "Darling," he's writing to Joan, "I've suddenly heard the bells ring. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm nearly asleep. I'll go on gently raving till dawn. 4 a.m. da da da," because he was a writer, and a letter was a great way to write. So this is a brand new addition to the Patti Fermor library. This is published by New York Review of Books with a strange cover.
It is a strange cover.
But I think the artist was a friend of his, and I think that's what happened.
Patrick Lee Fermor, A Life in Letters. All right.
Any time left?
Yeah, we have time left.
Oh, good.
I'm giving you all the time.
The hour and a half that I
want.
Right, thank you.
You asked for extra time. You asked nicely. And you know I love you, so
that's
go ahead.
Great. That's just terrific. Good Things Happen Slowly, A Life in and Out of Jazz by Fred Hirsch. Do you know Fred Hirsch's work?
I don't want to interrupt you, but I just have to tell you, I want to tell the listeners a quick story. So we're getting ready to go on the air, and Matt is pointing to one of the books, and he says, I don't believe any of the other booksellers who've been on have talked about this book. And I said, you know, Matt, I never worry about any of the books you bring in being talked by anybody because they're always so eclectic. And it fascinates me. It's your superpower. You find these books that are out, that are well-reviewed, that are beautiful, that are incredible, that are by major publishers sometimes by wonderful independent publishers, and you find them and you bring them to us. And just we couldn't be more grateful for that.
This is my pleasure.
This is what I've been doing best.
Thank you very much.
So this is Fred Hirsch's book, Good Things Happen Slowly, A Life in and Out of Jazz. So I do not know who Fred Hirsch is.
Fred Hirsch is a jazz player working now. He is an openly gay, HIV-positive jazz pianist. A sideman, they call him. Played with the greats as he came along. Has his own trio now. I missed an opportunity a few weeks ago to see him at the Village Vanguard, and I'll tell you, Joe, I had not heard of him before that. And a friend of mine in New York said, "You know, let's go see Fred Hirsch." And then a coincidence happened. Somebody else was offering a salon of Fred Hirsch's music, and then the book came out, and so. And I started reading it, and it's just lovely. He is a guy who wants to tell how he works, how he plays, what happens to him when he plays, what happens to him if he's going to do a tribute album to Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know what he. And then there's the danger in that a jazz pianist playing Broadway show tunes. And he talks about the danger. He talks about the challenge. And he very simply, it's not dreamlike prose like Shepard or Patti Smith, but it's straight ahead telling you what it is. And if you like jazz and if you know jazz or you want to know jazz, this is a great guy to read.
It is Good Things Happen Slowly, A Life in and Out of Jazz by Fred Hirsch.
And then I found another one that we just found out about 2 weeks ago. It's called, I didn't tell you about it over last night, Silence in the Age of Noise by Erling K-A-G-G-E, Kaga, a Norwegian. What is silence, he says, where can it be found, and why is it now more important than ever? I'm just going to read you a little paragraph from it. He says...
Well, I love when you read.
Oh.
Go ahead.
And then we'll have milk and cookies.
Excellent.
A few weeks after this book was published in Norway, I happened to meet so-and-so, a friend of his. We talked about silence, and she said the best way to describe it would be to put a blank sheet of paper in a Xerox machine and then hold the original and copy next to each other. That is silence.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
So this is the meditation on silence. He starts by talking about his sitting around the kitchen table or the dining room table with his children and people on the phone and constant silence is to be endured is what the young people think.
I think and I love this book.
This is one of these sweet books that we just found out about at a bookseller's conference.
Really beautiful.
Nicely produced. That cover is hypnotic.
Erling
Kaga.
And an explorer, lawyer, art collector, publisher, and author. So,
sounds like
your resume.
Yeah. Joe, I got a call from the book loft down in Great Barrington about a month or so ago. They said, we're going to have a couple of sales reps come by. Why don't you come by and you know, instead of going to the big conferences. And one of the sales reps presented this book. So a shout out to the book loft for getting this to my attention.
Well, that's terrific. Excellent. Well, anything else other than, I mean, I know you have a busy holiday season. People will be busting your doors down.
We have no more events. We had a great event last week for John Crowley, his book Ka, the Dar Oakley and the Ruin of Ymir.
Yep.
And we do have a bunch of signed copies of that one left, and it's going fast.
Excellent.
And it's terrific. He gave a great reading. He read three sections from the book. We also have signed copies of Brendan Matthews' book, The World of Tomorrow. Those are our two big books, and I want to mention those guys. The only other thing I'll say is Friday night I'm going to be at Shakespeare and Company reading an Isaac Bashevis Singer story. There's a little Firelight Productions Solstice Stories. It's 7 o'clock at the Bernstein Theater.
Excellent.
So if anybody is interested in that, I'll be reading a story, if I can make it through all the way, called A Parakeet Named Dreidel by Isaac Bashevis Singer. It's a children's story that I first read to my kids years and years ago. I don't think I cried then. I haven't been able to read it all the way through without crying since. Come by on Friday and see how I do.
See how you do. Well, it's a lovely thing, and I'm glad you're doing that. Yeah. It seems wonderful stuff. Well, it is no lie. Everyone knows this, that Matt's just one of my favorite humans on the planet. He is the proprietor of the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. You can check him out online, bookstoreinlenox.com. But, hey, you can go visit him, too. That's even better. 11 Housatonic Street, right in Lenox. Go see Matt and the whole crew over there. A beautiful, beautiful bookstore. Wonderful place to browse. You can. There's a Get Lit wine bar there.
The wine bar is open.
Wine bar is open.
You can't drink all day unless you start in the morning. Oh, I can't say that, can I?
Oh. Matt Tannenbaum, it's been a lovely 2017 as far as you coming in. The year pretty much has sucked, but your participation in it with me has been great.
My pleasure, Joe.
I look forward to 2018. You'll come back. You'll tell us about more Modiano. Everything will be great.
Everything is going to be great.
All right. Matt Tannenbaum, again, bookstoreinlenox.com. We post the list at wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.